you are in developing meaningful and influential conversations with your kids. And again, I just went through with all of you this important area to know that your kids are probably in different seasons of life. And you're going to hear some things that you say, I wished I'd heard 20 years ago or 30 years ago or whatever that answer would be for you. Again, we can't go back, but here's the beautiful thing about how God created our kids. Our kids love us, even though they sometimes don't act like it, and they desperately want a relationship with their parents. Therefore, there's a little bit of a transaction between us and them that with the right effort and the right attitude, we can begin to patch and renew that connection that we have with them. And that would be what I would ask you to do, is look for ways that you recognize the connection with your kiddos as we move through this area. Do you ever feel like in conversations, the way I did when I found myself the first year I went to D6 Korea, and I was in the middle of Seoul, I was standing at a church, I was talking to a large group, and we were all smiling, we were nodding, there was a lot of conversation going on, but I wasn't understanding a single word of it. It wasn't happening. I mean, it truly was two totally different languages. They were speaking Korean, I was speaking English, we had a ton in common, and while we had that commonality, we just shared space. Now, while I'm describing Seoul, South Korea in that moment, I'm probably also describing car rides you've had in your car with your teenagers. You're sharing space, there's conversation going on, but you're not communicating very well, and there's not a lot of communication, and you feel like, man, I'm getting nowhere, we have a lot in common, but it's just not happening there. And I want us to understand the difference in the seasons and the developments of our kids. I'm not going to go into this in depth, in no way, shape, and form, but here's the interesting part. We have, I'm assuming, a mom in the back of the room with a little one. How old, by the way?
4 months.
4 months. I'm trying not to make you yell because I know you're probably trying to settle her down. 4 months. Being a mom of a little one is challenging. However, as they grow and develop into infant and elementary stages, it's so easy to have conversations with those ages because they're curious, they want to learn, and they do think the coolest people in the world are their parents. We wish we could keep that cool factor going beyond that. It just doesn't seem to happen. But these are the easier stages, but something happens when our kids reach middle school. Have you noticed that? Middle school is that area where it seems like there's this UFO that just kind of comes in, takes our kid away, and drops back down this teen that we've never met a day in our life. And they look like a foreign person to us, and they're acting like a foreign person. And they pretend not to know you. It's like, hey, mom, dad, can you drop me off right here? I'll walk the next block to school. I don't want to be seen with you. I mean, there's a whole transformation that takes place. But I want us to understand that this is actually God ordained in its own way. You see, God has loaned you your kiddos. They were never yours. Now, how many, you only have kids that are below the age of 12? All of your kids are below the age of 12. Let me see your hands. Okay, I'm going to burst your bubble for just a minute. They are not yours. I mean, they are really on loan. You are in charge of raising these tiny humans, but your goal is to steward them in a way that they can make wise decisions when they get older. Again, that might not happen all the way through, but that's your goal. Now, I want to challenge you with one other aspect to this area. When we understand that our kids are on loan to us, then we act a little bit differently about what we teach them and how intentional that we're going to be. This is God giving us free will. If He's given your kids to you, they have free will just like you do. And I'm a big believer in God is superintending, not controlling. And I know I'm getting into theological areas here. God is sovereign. He has absolute sovereignty. But He does not create robots out of us. Therefore, He allows some free will. He allows free choice, even when I don't like that choice from my child. Or my child doesn't like the choice that I have made. But that's part of free will. And that happens. The part that gets tough for us is when our kids get older, we're developing them into young adults. That means we need to see decision-making happening in their lives at age 12, 13, 14. But if we're allowing decision-making, that means they're going to make some decisions we might not like. And I would rather them make the decisions in that stage than I would waiting for them to get out on their own to make them without our supervision. And I want to challenge you to allow your kids a little bit of latitude in those early ages while we're easier to have those conversations with. Now, let me state some foundational areas as we move through this. Number one, as it says up there, without connect conversation, generations do not value each other. In other words, your kids probably have a view of other people in the church and they say, well, he's just the old guy. I'm talking about me here or whatever, you know. It's like, he's just the old guy that walks around, whatever. Well, I am always going to be the old guy until I get to know their name, what they're passionate about, what they like. And the moment I start having a conversation, then I might become Mr. Ron or Mr. Hunter or whatever they want to call me in there. But now I'm building that relationship. The same thing's going to be true with your kids as well as with others. And without that conversation, then we can have no relationship. It's just not there. It won't happen. Without a relationship, there's no influence. And do not confuse being related as having influence. You say, well, they're related to me. It's funny, the people who are related with us are often the ones with the most strained relationships because they've spent so much time with you and they just adapt in other areas. We run into some barriers, and let me see if you agree with this, okay? We walk into our teenagers and we ask them that question like, hey, how was your day? And the first thing our teenagers want to think of is, mom, you're interrupting my game. Or let me put in my earbuds so I don't even have to listen. Okay, does that sound familiar? And that certainly happens in car rides in there where we're just trying to have a dialogue, but it's not happening. And there's all kinds of barriers that get in the way of everyday conversation. I could list them up here and I'm just going to throw them up in icon pictures. You'll recognize most every one of them. And by the way, before we get angry with our kids, everybody pull out your phones for a second here. How many times are your kids trying to talk to you and your face is plastered in this rectangle? Or in your tablet? Or in your computer? Now, if I were teaching this 15 or 20 years ago, I'd say in the newspaper or whatever, you know, book or you, wherever you bury your ideas. Now, I'm not saying that everything I'm placing up here is a problem, but it's interesting that kids can easily let these items become the barriers. Our challenge as moms and dads is to not let those electronics, not let those sports be the barrier. Use them as rallying points. Use them as connecting points. And do something a little bit different with where we are. I want to tell you a story about a lady named Jennifer. Jennifer was our photographer at Randall House that has traveled to our D6 conference at several years. And when we've got to make those headshots that people print in programs when we go to speak and all those things that, you know, basically when you look at them, you go, yeah, they haven't changed their hairstyle in the last 20 years. It's time to update that photo. Well, we try to bring her in every about 3 or 4 years and update photos. Well, she came in and we were all rotating going down to our studio to get our pictures made by Jennifer. And when I walked down there, she says, Ron, I know how you like to do this. She says, you hate your picture being made. I said, yes, I do. I really do. I hate that with a passion. She says, Ron, I know you. She said, why don't you just launch into one of your talks? And she said, I'll just start snapping pictures. And it may be a little bit more of an action or whatever. But she said, we're going to capture some good ones. She said, what are you working on? Just start talking. And I was working on a talk about prodigals. And so I launched into my talk. And I just kind of jumped in midstream and started where I'd been working and praying. And I was just talking away. And she was clicking. And I noticed the clicks got slower. And she finally dropped the camera. And there were tears rolling out of her eyes. And she says, Ron, you're describing the relationship between me and my teenage son. I said, what's going on? And she says, he won't stop playing that stupid video game. Now, I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but that's a common area for our kids. And I want to tell you, video games are fun. You know what I asked? I asked her. Anybody want to guess what my next question was? It's exactly right. I actually started a little bit lighter. I said, have you ever asked your son if you can sit down and watch him play? And she kind of looked at me with the dumbest, you know, like shock, like I've never thought about it. I said, yeah, just, I said, walk in and plop down beside of him and say, hey, can I watch you play? He's probably going to mess up because he can't imagine mom's not picking on him or berating him for playing his game. But I said, just sit down beside of him and ask, can you watch? And she said, never thought about that. I said, now after a few minutes, ask him the second question. She said, what's that? And it's exactly what Mr. Jim said. Will you teach me how to play? Well, your son's going to take 2.4 seconds to calculate and go, yeah, I can teach mom. She's not going to be very good, but I get to beat her really badly. And that's going to be his you know, wonderful moment there. And here's the cool part. You as a mom or you as a dad are going to begin to understand your passion that your child has for that game. But it's also going to give you a bridge to their heart when you say, hey, we need to look at some time boundaries around this. Because when you say it to them, when you understand it, they are more receptive to go, hey, mom, dad plays this with me. They know how much I love it. They played it, but they don't want me to play it for like 7 hours every day. They want me to limit it to X or whatever you put around them. So it's a way to bridge to your child's heart when we make those connections. And that's what I want us to begin to see. How do we do that in these scenarios? Now, I want to ask a question here. How many of you are introverts? Let me see your hands if you're an introvert in this room. Raise your hands up higher. Come on, higher. For you, this is killing you. You hate raising your hand. I can just see it in you. I wish that the, from a psychological standpoint, I really wish this were facing the other way. I need to invert that. I need to start with the extroverts because they're sitting there going, when are you going to call me? When are you going to call me? When's my hand going up? But I'm starting over here for a moment, okay? Introverts. Yes, exactly. You're almost there now. We'll get there. What's really interesting, Myers-Briggs has been, you know, evaluating people for a long time, and that's my source. You'll see it down at the bottom. But it represents roughly 46.2% of the population. By the way, I'm in that group. I don't know if you realize it or not. On a scale of 0 to 100, you want to guess where I rank on the introverted? Introverted being total introvert, 0, total extrovert being a 100. Anybody want to guess where I am, rank on that? 80%, okay? Anyone else? 30%, okay? We're getting closer. I'm 7, okay? 7. I am drained at the end of one of these days. I mean, it just takes all my energy out of me. Now, I love teaching. I love speaking. But you put me in a room to host and interact with 6 or 7 people with small talk, I'll tell you in a moment how I work that. And it's the same way you'll do it with your kids, okay? You've already figured it out. You nailed me on it like 2 minutes into doing it a while ago. But it's my defense mechanism, and I'm going to teach you yours. But this represents half of all the adults. Now, how many of you in here are, I just want to see who would raise their hand before I actually said it. Extroverts. Extroverts, raise your hands. Come on. Good deal. We actually have more introverts in here, which is not uncommon when people elect, because the introverts feel like I need to come get instruction on this, okay? However, I would argue that it's kind of a mix, because the truth is when we look at the differences, introverts, they need help starting the conversation, but typically they're going to easily move it to meaningful content. Extroverts, on the other hand, have no problem starting the conversations, but they struggle shifting that conversation to a faith talk. And that's what I want to help you do in here today, okay? So, we're going to look at some scriptures here just quickly. You're familiar with them. James tells us that our tongue, our speech is influential, incredibly so. Proverbs reminds us to not wear down another person with our speech. Now, let me just pause there. If I were to interview your son or daughter away from you, would they say, hey, dad, mom, they just wear me down? That's our natural tendency because we're passionate about teaching them what is right or correcting them, and it's so easy to preach or lecture or just let them know. And I'll share some stories as we kind of dive into this to make this a little more personal. Colossians tells us that our conversations should be full of grace, seasoned with salt. Ephesians says that we should build our kids up. We need to affirm them. I like to do amateur woodworking, and I've been able to build a fairly nice wood shop at my house. And I love working with wood. Can't afford to work with wood right now. So I've kind of put that on pause. I'm sure some of you saw on Facebook that little image of the splinter on the finger where the guy was arrested for embezzling thousands of dollars of wood out of Home Depot. The thing about wood, though, is when you sand it, you always sand with the grain. And if you ever take sandpaper and go against the grain, you've got to rub about 20 times with the grain to work out that one against the grain. I want you to remember that illustration when you're talking with your kids. If you're always preaching, lecturing, correcting, that's against the grain. It has to be done, but we need a whole lot more with the grain, affirming, complimenting, engaging, and just talking with them so that we earn the privilege to go against the grain. Proverbs chapter 15 says we should de-escalate in tone and in volume. We need to take that down. As adults, we really should control that conversation in its tone and attitude. Doesn't mean we can control it on the other side, but we can model the correct approach on ours. Now, let's get into some nuts and bolts in here. God, our Father, is our model. He's our example. He came down in the Garden of Eden and had daily conversations with His kids. We should be striving for daily conversations. We should be striving to just engage them. And we'll talk through again how. I'm just laying some principles. Remember in post-fall, Enoch, incredible. That's kind of that conversational model that we have in the Bible, that he walked with God and he was not, for God took him. That was after the fall. Elijah, we hear all the great miracles, but remember the still small voice. That's conversational. God the Father desires conversation with us, His kids. Our Heavenly Father, He has modeled it, and therefore we should desire that conversation with our kids. Now, I want to give you a quick formula, and again, it is covered in the book, but you've got great notes up here, and if anybody wants to take this talk back, share it with your church, I'll give it to you. There's nothing proprietary. If you email me, I'll provide the PowerPoint to you. You're welcome to teach this on your own. You can grab the book, get a little deeper into it. But here's the formula, in short, that you can use to connect at a deeper level with your kids. It's called Talk Abe. We're going to go through all seven of those letters really quickly here. Talk Abe, how to have a meaningful conversation. And we'll take a look at each one of these. Let's start with T for topics. We love to play in our family the game High-Low. Now, I need a volunteer. I'm trying to dig out. Here we go. This is perfect. That's going to come loose. There we go. Okay. This is good. Who's the extrovert in the room? Extroverts, raise your hands again. Extroverts, good deal. Come on up. If I call on an introvert, this is going to take all day. So I'm just going to cut to the chase here. Okay. He's going to help me out here. And what we're going to do, he's going to play the role of my teenage son, okay? By the way, my son's name is Michael. Our daughter's name is Lauren. Okay, so Mitch, here's what we do. There's stories I'm going to tell, but we actually started this game when our kids were probably 5 or 6, and it went all the way through their teenage years. And I'll tell you how it worked. When they were 5 or 6, we said, hey, we're going to teach you a game called the tennis ball game, okay? And the tennis ball game is kind of the second area in here. And it basically, you ask the questions I have on the board here. We literally did pull out a tennis ball out of our toy box. And the reason why we used the tennis ball is nobody in our family played tennis. So when we said the tennis ball game, it didn't get them excited for something other than what they knew it represented. Doesn't matter what the object is. Today we're using Tic Tacs, okay? So I'd look at Mitch and I'd say, hey Mitch, what was the best part of your day? Okay, now he answered my question. He tossed back the tennis ball, but he did one thing wrong, but I didn't give him instructions. Mitch, I want to teach you how to play the tennis ball game. Okay. You get to throw the ball when you ask a question. What was the worst part of your day? When this guy lectured me on the tennis ball game.
All right, so now I have to ask you a question.
You have to ask me a question.
Dad, what was your best part of your day?
My best part of my day was when I got to talk to these incredible people about my kiddos and the conversations we had along the way. And we would continue to toss the ball back and forth. We started that at ages 5 and 6 with our kids. The truth is, the physical tennis ball only needs to exist for probably 2 weeks if you do this daily. And then the tennis ball can go away, and then we can continue the game and say, hey, what made you mad today?
Oh, you're asking.
Yes, that was, now I'm metaphorically throwing the tennis ball, and Mitch would say?
When my friend talked about me.
Okay, and?
Said something that he lied about me.
I don't care, you gotta ask a question back.
Oh, I got a question back. I thought you were gonna have an answer. What was your worst part of your day?
Good, and you see how this goes. And so when you teach your kids, what was the high part of your day? What was the low part of your day? I love the second set of questions because they're emotional. What made you mad? What made you sad? What made you glad? And by the way, kids are prompted by emotion more than logic when they're younger. Shouldn't be. That's not what we base our actions on, but it is the catalyst by which they move. Somebody hits them, somebody does something unfair, they want to respond, and they typically want to respond in a way that might not be biblical. So therefore, playing this game gives us a chance to coach the moments of their day on a daily basis. So the best time to play this kind of game would be when? What's that? Get off from work, yes. What else? Supper, dinner, good. Bedtime, picking them up from school. Any moment at any part of the end of the day. And it should just be natural conversation. You're riding in the car. Hey, what was the best part of your day? What was the high part? These are just normal conversations. And by the way, you would have those with any person at this convention. And you say, hey, what are you enjoying today? What have you eaten in Memphis? I mean, I started that earlier. What's some of your best food you've eaten? I began tossing those questions to you, and you began to respond. Now, it's interesting, I asked everybody in the room before we began, but nobody asked me what I ate. But anyway, that's Mr. Jim. Yes, sir.
How many days a week do you have to do this for it to be valuable?
Yeah, good question. Here's the key, and I will get to a little bit more of this formula, but I would do this daily, because this is what I call surface-level conversation. Quite honestly, it's kind of meaningless, it's filler. There's nothing threatening about what was the best part of your day, what was the worst part of your day. Now, if he says to me, the coach benched me, that was the worst part of my day, now we're going to go to a level 2, and that actually comes from another book, but I'll kind of jump in here a little bit. This is what I call sandcastle, snorkel, and scuba, okay? Sandcastle is that high part of your day. Everybody's on the beach in the sand, but there's very few people want to put on a snorkel and get into, you know, a little bit deeper water. Well, when he says something went wrong, now, aha, for us as parents, red flag, coachable moment. Okay? Coachable moment. Now I get to say, hey, the coach benched you. Why did he bench you? Not, were you being bad again? That's not the way that's going to be receptive here. Don't make assumptions. Always a question. So, you know, what went on to cause you to be benched? And he would tell me. And then I would keep asking questions. And then we're going to get into some, how do we reframe this, okay? But I would say the high-low, the mad, glad, sad, that should take place daily. And by the way, if your kids are grown and moved away, like ours are, I do it via text. Now, again, you have to respect the introvertedness or extroverted with your kids. Our daughter is a total extrovert. Our son is an introvert. So for my son and I, it's probably 3-4 times a week, okay? My daughter, it's daily. And if I don't hit her, she's hitting me up on the same types of questions. But they know, hey, how was your day? My son will answer via text, and you know what he does? He's 27 years old. He tosses the tennis ball back and asks me a question to this day. That's just part of our dialogue. It's what we do, okay? Now, thank you. I want to say thanks to Mitch, okay? You can have one or two of my Tic Tacs, okay? Okay. So we're playing these games, and we're moving through this. Now, let's get to... You've already heard this, but the A is asking questions, okay? You've got to constantly phrase them in the form of questions. Your kids need to learn how to think. And if you're always telling them, they're never going to learn to think on their own. So ask them, teach them, coach them, and set them up for both success and to mess up. It's okay. and find coachable moments in this. And the tennis ball game allows that to happen. And then you can work this into daddy-daughter dates. You know, father-son, mom-daughter, mom-son, whatever it is. Find time. If you have multiple kids, in addition to maybe everybody being around the dinner table or everybody being in the car, find at least one time a week where you're playing the tennis ball game and you're purposely probing a little deeper. You're like, hey, how's it going with the person you're dating if they're 16 or 17? Or how's it going with that troublesome teacher? You know the pet areas that your kids are struggling with, and it's a way just to say, hey, what's going on? I'm checking in. I care. I'm concerned about these areas. And you're asking those kinds of questions. And you just keep going through these areas like we do. Now, if you have an inverted kid, like our son Michael, he is the king of one-word answers. Can I get a parent identifying with that? Okay. How do you get past the one-word answers, okay? Real simple. I'm going to give you some great follow-ups here, okay? When you ask these types of follow-up questions, it's going to really, really help you. When you say, hey, what was the best part of your day? You know, and they say, lunch, you know? You say, well, what made that good? Maybe they say the type of food they ate, or maybe it was horrible. Maybe it was the company at the table. But you're going to probe with follow-up questions. You're going to say, tell me more. This is common sense. I mean, you're sitting there going, why did I come to this seminar to hear these simple phrases? But in the moment, as parents, we tend not to toss these out as questions. Tell me more. Tell me more. What do you mean by that? And parents, let me caution us, me included, don't assume you knew. Even if you think their motive was obvious, pause and let them tell you what went into that thought process. What did you mean by that? And if they said somebody else did something, you can rephrase it. What do you think they meant to do by that? Let them give you the commentary on it. What do you think caused this? Now notice, we just ventured in from surface to motive. We want to get kids beginning to analyze motive. Because when they analyze motive, now they've got to rationalize with what's moral, what's ethical, and what's right. Now we're teaching them how to think from a biblical level. Even though we didn't break out the sermon or the Bible, we're in a simple conversation. What do you think caused it? And they could begin to say, help me understand this. What did you mean by that? Don't assume that. And I love this one. What do you think should have happened? Now you're giving them the chance to replay it and say, if it had happened with a good outcome, what would have needed to take place? What should have happened? Now you're allowing your child to go, okay. And by the way, we call that an after-action review. When we get done with this convention, every leader at Randall House is going to sit around a table for 3 hours, and we're going to go through the 6 months before the convention, the load day, the first day of unload, the first day of Sunday. I've already made notes today, things going wrong. And we're going to go through every day and every moment going, what went well, what didn't go so well, what went horribly wrong, what do we need to always do, what do we need to do differently. That's all we're doing here is teaching our kids how to reflect upon the moment so that when that moment gets there next time, they can purpose in their heart to do it the right way, the way Daniel did. We're teaching them to be purposeful. Does this make sense? Again, not rocket science by no means in where we are. Then, if you're asking questions, refrain from jumping into lecture mode. Listen, pause. Take in what they're saying. Conversation is not one way. Extroverts, raise your hands again, really high. Extroverts, say it with me. Conversation is not one way. Can you say that loud with me? Conversation is not one way. Okay, now we as extroverts, we don't mind you talking the whole time. You wear us out, but we don't mind you talking the whole time. But our kids are accustomed to us just dominating the conversation and being right in every one of those conversations. When we need to ask questions and let them talk, even if they're not getting it right, we're looking for ways to coach them in it. Teach your kids to listen by your listening skills. I'll never forget my son coming to me, and he was in his freshman year. We've kind of known from early on, our son's an introvert, and he likes to figure out how things work. We saw how his mind was working at a very young age, and we just began to cultivate, you know, how is it working? And he went on, you know, short-term mission trips, and, you know, we explored all the various possibilities, but there was just one passion he always had, and that was being an engineer. And so my son went off to a college, to the college of his choice, to start studying engineering. And I'll tell you, it'll come up in a moment here, but it's amazing compliments from other adults outside of the home, how powerful they are, and they can actually change your kid's trajectory. He was volunteering in the youth group as a freshman in college, and our youth pastor said, "Man, you're doing sound really well. I'm so thankful you're in our youth group running sound." So he came home that night and says, "Dad, I want to change my major to sound for you know, church things." I'm like, "Son, there's not a major for that. We're not going to do this." We had to talk to him like, "That is a hobby." You know, that was an easy one. But then something else happened at the end of his freshman year that wasn't an easy conversation. He was approaching, he was actually approaching the winter break. It was December. And he said, "Dad," he said, "at the end of this next semester," he said, "I really need to transfer schools." I said, "What's up?" And I mean, this was a heavy conversation. For him to raise that question, I knew he had thought about it a long time and did not come easy to him. And I said, what's prompting this? He says, "Well," he said, "where I'm going," he said, "it's a well-known, you know, engineering school." He said, "If I don't make it, there's 200 people ready to fill my slot. The teachers don't care." He said, "The labs are not as good. I'm struggling in a couple of classes, and the teachers aren't providing any extra help for me." And he said, "You know, I will be closer to the young lady I'm dating back at home in my church." Well, I ignored everything he said until the dating part. And as a dad, I launched in kind of harsh. "Son, we don't make life decisions based on who you're dating. This is a season of life. I know this doesn't feel like it, but this is a moment. You will get through this. You bury down." You know, and I realized then my introverted son had waged all of the change in his pocket to have this conversation with Dad, because it was a very serious conversation. And I saw his countenance drop. And I think that's what we need to recognize as parents, is when our kids' countenance drop. And when their countenance drops, they've now turned us off. And they're no longer listening. And I don't care how godly we try to become or what we may say, it is not going to resonate. And so I used a phrase that I've used with adults and my kids and say, "You know what? This is a big conversation. Maybe we need to pick it up tomorrow." And so that evening, I'm laying in bed with my wife, and I'm recounting this, and she's like, "Yep, you're not listening to your son." I hate it when my wife is the prophet of the family, but so many times she is. And she did. She says, "Ron, you're not listening. He gave you three reasons, and you fixated on the one." And I said, "Let's all have this conversation." The next night, we all three had it, and we agreed to help him transfer schools. What's funny is he and the young lady that was at our church, they broke up. She broke up with him. That became a non-issue. He transferred schools, but I am convinced had I bogged down on the original conversation, he probably would have flunked out or would have changed his major and been somewhat unhappy for the rest of his career, because we weren't helping him achieve what God was calling him to do. He changed schools, thrived, flourished, and he's still in his field serving wonderfully and doing amazing things. But we've got to listen when our kids speak to us. Now, the fourth one is kudos. And that's forcing a word on that K, but it means compliments. So can you offer compliments to your kids? They need to hear them from you. Just like I said, my son heard the compliment from the youth pastor. It almost changed his trajectory. Dr. Sykes is sitting in here. I'm going to pick on him for a minute. I can't tell you how many kids I bump into who want to major in psychology because their high school teacher, who is a psychologist, who understands how to connect, made an inspirational impression on their kids. I don't want, no offense to any other, it doesn't matter what area it is, I don't want a teacher in high school, affecting my kids' permanent lifelong career decisions. I want God, I want the church, I want this to be calling. I want it to be, and it's amazing when a teacher looks at them and says, you're really good at this, or you're really good at that. It warms their heart. And so we need to realize that if we want to warm our kids' hearts, we got to stop focusing on the chores they didn't do and comment on the things they've done well by mixing in the chores they didn't do. The wood grain, remember that? Against the grain, with the grain. But when they become teenagers, the problem is we see them less and less. Therefore, we're having to quickly say, hey, you didn't do this, or you got to clean your room, or what about this? And it seems like we only have time for the corrective conversations, which means you've got to be more intentional about them. Do not underestimate the power of affirming your kids. Let them hear 60 to 80% of, now get this, who they are. Who they are, rather than what they've done. I'm convinced we as Baptists stink at this. I wished I had an hour on this one topic, but we're so good at critiquing people's performance that we don't talk about the characters of who they are internally, their integrity, their kindness, their compassion. No, we talk about cleaning their room. We talk about grades. We talk about all the things that are on the exterior. We are really good at teaching them how to be Pharisees. And we're horrible at teaching them how to be godly kids. And it's those internal characteristics. Why do you think we're breeding racism comments all over the place? It's because we haven't understood the internal values. We only care about the external factors. And we get into all of these areas from a non-biblical standpoint. So we talked about the ingredients. That's everything up here on this talk bubble, okay? These are the things that we said out loud in the conversation. Now I want you to notice we're going to shift to the things that we're not saying, which are the thoughts that are going on while the conversation is occurring. So while we're talking, thank you, while we're talking over these topics, while we're asking questions, while we're listening, while we're complimenting, all the while, I want to ask you to multitask. Be thinking about Abe. Now, yes, that forms the profile of Abraham Lincoln, and maybe you're sitting there going, why Abraham Lincoln? Well, quite honestly, he was one of the great leaders who tackled some of the toughest topics with the very best tones. I could list them and spend a lot of time on them, but he preserved the nation in the midst of a civil war. He issued the Emancipation Proclamation. That was no easy task. The Gettysburg Address was intended to heal a very broken and divided country. And what most people don't realize until you read the book Team of Rivals or you understand his background, but he actually hired his enemies to be part of his closest counselors that surrounded him in his cabinet. Read about that. That's quite interesting. But if it works with politicians, I'm telling you, it can work with teenagers. So let's take Abraham Lincoln's approach and let's use, number one, the approach which is intentionality and attitude. When your kids walk in the room, can they tell if you're mad or happy? Can they tell if you're mad or happy at them? Maybe you just came from a very tough meeting at work. But then they know, I need to avoid Dad for the rest of the night. We need to be intentional. I want you to find a metaphorical light switch. From the place you park your car at home, how many park your car in a garage? How many have a garage that you can't park in? Okay, that's me, okay. When you walk in your home, you're going to pass a light switch somewhere. I want you to do your very best that when you pass the very first light switch you see, that you flip off work. And that you make your kids or you make your spouse the most important thing that is in that moment for the rest of the day. And I know if you're a pastor in this room or you're a supervisor, director, leader, it's hard to turn that off because those things are occupying the rent space of your mind. You can't unsee and unthink about some of the things you heard that day. But I need you to do your very best to turn it off and be very, very intentional in your approach because your kids can tell it. I want you to schedule your family time, okay? You schedule everything else. I've got a calendar. And when people come up to me and say, hey, I'd really like to meet with you, I pull out my calendar. Well, if I've got a family event, schedule it in your calendar. And when somebody asks for it and says, hey, Ron, do you have time? I'm going to look and say, no, I'm booked. I don't need to tell them, hey, I'm having, you know, a ball game with my son or we're going to, you know, go to Chuck E. Cheese or whatever. That's irrelevant. I'm just going to look and say, I'm booked. Can we do it another time? And you know what? They're going to say yes, and we'll find another time. But then our kids are going to realize they're as important as your work is to you. And we don't often do that with our kids. So schedule it. Do not make ministry or career orphans out of them, because that will create a loneliness where they will find affirmation and satisfaction in a whole nother group that may not be what you want them to find. Then I want to emphasize table time. Table time. I'm being super vulnerable with you here. We were not great at table time. I wish we were. We had differing values. We had a lot of busyness. We had a lot of extracurricular sports and church events, and it seems like our table time was the drive-through in the minivan, you know? And maybe you can resonate with that. But I'm going to tell you something. Studies, and here it is. I've got all my notes down at the very bottom. See this Christian college here? Can you read that? What does it say? University of Minnesota, it is not a Christian college. A secular study said that kids value table time more than they valued vacations or any other item that happened in their home growing up. Wow. Then schedule at least one a week, maybe two, and do some devotional time around it. When the plates are cleared, say, hey, let's talk about what scripture we've been reading this week. And you start, Dad. Here's what God was saying to me. That's the phrase you want to begin with. If you have a D6 devotional magazine, it's a great place to start, because we have some questions that make this easy to ask and connect. But you say, here's what God is saying to me. And then you look and say, Mitch, what's God saying to you? Not, hey, God's telling me you're dating the wrong person, guy. You know, don't make it a sermon. Teach them how to listen to the Heavenly Father. That's the point that we want to get to. When you approach your child with a connecting goal rather than a corrective goal, they will be more receptive. Let's get to the B. I got to spend tons of time here. I did a lot of research on the catalyst between cognitive motivation and emotional motivation. And if you'd asked me many years ago, I'd say, you just tell them what's right and they'll figure it out. But I'm going to tell you, emotional is far more catalytic than cognitive is. But cognitive's where truth is found. But they often define truth based upon the emotional reaction of what they've witnessed in the moment. That's where apologetics has to be part of our conversations. We got to teach our kids how to interpret emotions and brain reactions here. So our kids' brains are not fully formed until around age 25, and we share more than truth with them. We share the reasoning that helped it. My parents would often say, you need to do so-and-so, and I'd be like, why is it we do that? And you know what their answer was? Because I said so. They never gave me the why behind it. I wasn't asking why as a smart aleck, but I want to know why this happens. Teach your kids the why. Give them the understanding so that when they're old enough to make decisions, they know the why, not just because mom and dad said so. And we have emotion. I'm going to speed through as we finish up and wrap up here. But if kids are not fully formed in their minds until about age 25, what drives their decisions? Emotion. Let me illustrate it. You offer a small child, 3 or 4, do you want this dime or you want this nickel? Which one are they going to pick? The bigger one, the shinier one, okay? My son, when he was 6, 7, 8, 9, anything that came on TV, we need to order that. That works. I mean, as seen on TV, that was the gospel. And again, the emotion behind those commercials, it was perfect. Because a child learns through relationships, that's how they also learn to be bigots. Because a child learns through relationships, that's how they learn to be racists and atheists and adopt values of other people that they respect. Whether it's that teacher who's confirming them or affirming them or complimenting them, or maybe they find a group of peers that will accept them just the way they are, more so than mom and dad does at times, because they view negative experiences as shaping values just as much as positive ones. They get ridiculed in their inadequacies, they've been told that they're bad, and they also suffer from gender confusion. They're struggling in these areas. These are all normal struggles, but we've got to have that conversation. It's where they get to body shaming, and on we go. I could tell stories about each one of these, but these are major moments in history where emotion changed the outcome, and it made a world of difference. And you can pick the one, but basically, visuals move us in where we are. So this is the formula. Talk, Abe. I want to challenge you to just continue to have those kinds of conversations. I'm going to share with you a couple of resources. You don't need our resources. I'm going to give you one that's absolutely free. Download the D6 Family app, and we have what's called Family Fun Questions. When you're in your car, you're in the line at the grocery store, you're sitting in a restaurant, flip open the app. There's about 600 and some odd questions in there, and it's just thought-provoking. It's tossing the tennis ball. You'll have a blast with them, absolutely free. If you want a printed version of various questions, we took some out of our app and we monetized them. So if you want to pay $3 for a book that you can get free on the app, come buy the book, okay? And you're going to get only a handful of the 600 questions that you have in there, but this will give you a sampling. And we have these down at the table, but it'll teach you how to toss the tennis ball. But I'm going to tell you, it's important to segue into a little deeper conversations. Books by people like Natasha Crane, Hillary Ferrara, Mama Bear Apologetics. This is talking to your kids about Jesus. She's got one talking to her about God. And Natasha has one coming out next year talking to your kids about the Holy Spirit. This makes it simple. Have those conversations. You know why we don't have those conversations? Because we don't know how to have those conversations. We haven't studied it. And it's time for you to do that. I'm going to give you one more and then let you go. This was just released 6 weeks ago. About You, About Me. It's a generational legacy journal. And this is a chance. Maybe you have a son or daughter that's older and they're not listening as much anymore. Maybe you have a small child growing up right now in your home. You have a great relationship. You open up the pages of this book, and on the left side, it asks you prompt questions. And I'm going to give you a couple here. A significant memory that stands out as having shaped me is, and you fill that out. And then on that right-hand side, it's about your child. When you look back at your childhood, I want you to remember, and here it is. You get a chance to speak into your child's life while they're growing up, or maybe they're grown, and you want to leave this behind. I can't tell you how many kids have come to find Christ because of finding books like this where parents have journaled and spoken into their lives. Let me pray for us, and we'll have some questions. As you guys move on to the next session, we'll have to finish up, but I'll take questions for a moment here. God, I pray for the relationships in this room. That's the number one thing that we care about, is that we have a good relationship with our son or daughter, and that they know you as Lord and Savior. And I know, just from what stats tell us, that there are parents in this room that are struggling with the relationship with their son or daughter. And there are parents in this room who have lived godly lives, done everything right, and yet some peer or some teacher or some event has tragically pulled their child out of church and maybe away from the faith. I pray, Lord, that they will utilize conversations to maintain that relationship and prayerfully waiting for that moment where they can step back in with the Word of God in a way that that child will be most receptive. Give them discernment, but most of all, give them a wonderful relationship that facilitates that moment. We ask in your Son's name. Amen.